Accession number 10600, Reel 11.
Mr. John Wainwright, Reel 11. What happened when you arrived at Belton Park, Grantham?
Well, Belton Park seemed to be the collecting point. It was a very, very big camp. Belton Park was a very extensive sort of park there, and there were army huts and all that sort of thing all over the place. People were reporting there, it seemed to me, from almost every unit in the British Army, because there'd been this call for volunteers to the machine gun corps, and that was the collecting point. And there seemed to be hundreds of people reported about the same time that we were. And we were just sorted out, and eventually our company was formed as a 203 machine gun company. Men were selected and the right number of people for that. The officers were allotted to it. I was allotted as the company quartermaster sergeant of that company, and a man who later became quite a friend of mine was the company sergeant major of the company. We were both at that time only 21, I think I mentioned before.
What was his name?
Cyril Tolley. He came from Harrogate in Yorkshire. He was a DCM, by the way, and Barr. He had a DCM when he reported at Grantham. And later on, when we went out to France, he got Barr to his DCM at Passchendaele.
What was the composition of 203 Machine Gun Company?
Well, the composition, as far as the personnel was concerned, there were probably something like 200 men altogether in there. There was a major, and the allotted number of machine guns to a company was 16. So there were 16 machine guns, and there were 16 officers in charge, they're mostly lieutenants in charge of each machine gun there, and then probably up to half a dozen men to each machine gun. There was a transport section too, because each machine gun had a limber, you know, the limber there was by horse drawn or mule drawn there, and there was all the ammunition for it with the machine gun and thousands of rounds of ammunition. So there were 16 limbers and either sufficient horses or mules to draw those there. Each officer was allotted a horse, rather a charger. So it means we had quite a big transport section in the corps. There was a transport officer and a transport sergeant and sufficient drivers for all these horses and mules or whatever they were. Mules when we got to France, actually.
The machine guns, they'd be Vickers, would they?
They were the Vickers machine guns, yes.
Now, you were the company quartermaster sergeant. Did you actually have to be trained in the machine gun yourself, or was your job purely administrative?
Well, it was mainly... Well, the job as a quartermaster sergeant was administrative, but I did a crash course in the machine gun, with Vickers machine gun, actually, out of fire and went through the mechanism of the machine gun and all the parts, and I had to deal with stoppages and firing and so forth, went on the firing range. So I had a crash course, actually, in the machine gun itself, lasted a week.
That was at Belton, was it?
We moved from Belton to Clipston.
Oh, how long was that?
Pardon? I used to think it took probably 2 or 3 weeks or a month at the outside, because when the men were allotted there, first of all, my job as a company quartermaster sergeant, one of the jobs was to see that the men were properly clothed. Every man had certain articles of clothing and equipment and so forth. So my job was to see that they're absolutely fully equipped in clothing and everything else.
Do you remember what that was at that stage in the war for a machine gun?
Well, it was all laid down as to a shirt, socks and housewives of knife, fork and spoon and goodness knows what not. You had to have everything in the way of personal kit there. It was all laid down there in the form. Each man had a clothing statement there. And That's I had to see that those articles were there. If a man hadn't got those articles, I had to see that they got them from somewhere.
Who did you apply to? So you'd get an indent of what you needed. Who would you give that to?
Well,
you wouldn't have a regiment, would you?
No, we were actually a machine gun company. Was a company on its own. The commanding officer had a commanding officer's pass. It was a unit on its own. So the next highest stage would be the brigade. If you were attached to a brigade, then it would be the brigade. Or if you're attached to a division, it would be the division.
But while you were at Clipston or at Grantham earlier, who did you get your first lot of equipment from the depot?
Oh, there was a depot there for equipment there, and you had to indent for it and sign for it and so forth.
Would you be responsible for the horses, rations?
I'd be responsible that they got the right rations, because horses were rationed too. They had so many pounds of this and so many pounds of this, that and the other. And that was... So I was responsible for that as well. So responsible for all the ammunition, all the food, all the clothing, and so on of all the company.
Were you able to cope with all the paperwork? That's quite a job.
Well, no, there was an orderly office belonging to the company. And I worked from the orderly office. I used to be in the orderly office and deal with the matter from there, like an ordinary office.
How was the orderly office organised?
Well, there was a commanding officer there and a second in command. There was also an adjutant to each company. And the adjutant, he was the top administrative officer for the company. So it was just like I was the administrative officer for the men. The adjutant was the administrative officer for the whole all of the company. So it just ran like a well-run office.
What sort of personal relationship did you have with it? I mean, you obviously had a close working relationship with the adjutant and the other officers in the orderly officer. How did you get on with them?
I got on very well with them, except the major in charge of the company was a very, very strict disciplinarian. And there's nothing very friendly about him there. He just carried out his duties as a disciplinarian there. He was never a friendly sort of man. But the adjutant was... I got on very well with him. I knew we had little sort of private chats about our own lives and what sort of things that had happened before the war, our interests and sporting interests. I remember quite well. I remember it too. He was a very keen rugby union man and played somewhere in the West Country. And I came from a rugby league centre. I used to told him about the rugby league and all that sort of thing.
Do you remember his name?
Bickley, yes. Lieutenant Bickley.
That was the adjutant. And the major?
The major was... Wilkins, H.E.B. Wilkins. I have an idea that he was an ex-rugby union international, but I'm not too certain.
Did the discipline that he was establishing, was that perhaps not just more the regular style discipline as opposed to the territorial style discipline you were used to?
Oh, yes. He was a very, very strict disciplinarian. I think I'll be able to give an incident later on, perhaps, when we were in France. But he was a very, very strict disciplinarian. He was never friendly as such with the men. He wasn't a friendly type. He was I don't know whether you call it the old army regular type, I don't know.
Do you think that approach worked better than the territorial approach you'd been used to in the 5th Manchester? Or did you think... Do you think it was efficient, or do you think it was counterproductive? You'd seen both methods.
Well, there's always a case for enforced discipline and discipline by example. And this was a case of enforced discipline, I should say.
So what was happening? What happened while you were at Grantham and Clipson? What was the progress of the affair?
Well, once the battalion, the unit had been formed and we'd got all the equipment and so forth, then the next stage we we moved out to Clipston.
That would be a month after Easter then?
Yeah, about a month after we were there, and the men went through, there was a firing range there. The men went through the range, they had to be trained in the operation of the machine gun and so forth. A lot of the people who joined, they knew very little about the machine guns, the machine gun corps at all, or the machine.
They get a longer course than your crash
course? Oh yes, they got a proper training and firing on the ranges. I went on the ranges in charge of men to see that they went through the firing. I'd already done my firing on the range, so I had to take parties down there to do the regulation firing at different ranges and so forth.
What did you think of the Vickers as a machine gun?
It was very effective. It was very effective indeed. And
were they taught any of the new techniques of machine gun firing, like barrage fire, at non-visible targets and that sort of thing? Was any of that taught at
this time? Well, it was quite a lot of things, because there was such a thing as range finding on you. You had to know the range of, because normally, very often, you were firing something behind the front line, when you're out on active service. You might have to range at anything, 1,000 yards, 600, 800 yards there. So you had to be trained as to estimating, first of all, what the range was of the objects you were firing at. There was one instrument we used, it was a bar and stroud. Don't ask me how it worked, but this bar and stroud instrument enabled us to get more or less the accurate range of.
Was that in training or in France?
That was in training, and then that was used on active service. No. I remember this bar and stroud, and they say you could get the range of an object anywhere 1,000 yards away, less than, or whatever it was.
How long were you at Clipston?
Well, the next, we went probably at Clipston there again, it was probably a month, 2 months. That's coming on to about, February or March. And then we were moved to Salisbury Plain.
It'd be a bit later then, because I thought you said you went to Grantham in at Easter.
No, we went to Grantham at the end of the year. That was before Christmas.
Can we just run through the dates? Because I think we found a bit of an error. You were at the recruiting office till about April 1916.
Yes.
And then from there you went, actually, we've missed it, to the command depot.
Then we went to the... I told you that the regimental quartermaster sergeant took over from me. And it was then that I had reported to the command depot at Heaton Park.
And what did you do there?
Well, it was under treatment. There was the collecting place for people who had been in a hospital and sick, wounded, and so forth, who weren't fully fit, and were there for treatment until they were fit.
What kind of treatment were you getting there?
Well, we had medical inspections, and I remember quite well having some therapeutic treatment on my knee for this. Rheumatism and so forth. It was there, stripped out, and there, mum was putting high pressure jet of water onto my limbs and that sort of thing. I remember that therapeutic treatment. I had to do all sorts of exercises and whatnot.
Were you on any actual duties while you were there, the command depot?
The only duty that I remember being there was being in charge of we were all in huts, number of men, and I was in charge of a particular hut there. There were probably 20 or 30 men in the hut, and I had a cubicle in one end, one corner of the hut, and I was there in charge of the men just for discipline and that sort of thing.
Now, you were there from roughly April 1916 to when?
Well, there must have been about October that...
And that's when you went
to... That's when we went to Southport.
And we've covered that already. And you left...
We had our medical examination and treatment. People had all sorts of treatments. People had been wounded and some were sick and... There were all sorts of treatment that was happening there. Then you were graded when you first went. There's A1 and B2 and B1 and B3, C1, C3. A1, you were fit for active service. B, something, you were only fit for garrison duty. C, you were only fit for something else.
And what were you when you arrived?
I was a C something. Then eventually I got back to a fit for active service again. So then I was sent off to, went off to Southport.
And that was in what month?
Where are we? That was about October.
So October 1916. Now, we've covered the Southport bit before. Mm. And when did you leave there to go to Clipston, to Grantham?
I was only there a few weeks. It was just before Christmas. It would be about November, I think. Could only have been there a few weeks.
So you were... That's where we've come back into line with what we've done. I'll correct the dates in the notes.
I think we're at Clipston at Christmas, so we'll be at Grantham 2 or 3 weeks. If we went there beginning at the end of November, probably there till about in the middle of December, the 30th, and then remember I was at Clipston at Christmas time.
And when did you leave Clipston, which brings us back into... How long were you at Clipston?
Well, the Clipston, that's where the men had this machine gun training, and then we went off to the Salisbury Plain to Fovant, was the nearest village.
And when was that, roughly?
That was in the spring of 1917. And we were attached to a division.
We were attached
to the 66th Division. Which was a second line division to the 42nd, as a matter of fact. The second line is the 2nd, 5th Manchester's, the 2nd, 5th Lancashire Fusiliers, and all those people comprise the 66th Division.
So those
divisions have been formed after the war had been, the first line had gone out overseas. The second line was formed from the second line of the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th Manchester. So on and so forth. They'd evidently been training up somewhere in the country. We don't know nothing to do. We were just attached to them before they were evidently going to be ordered abroad. So we were attached to the 66th Division, and after a week or two in the plane, there again it must have been a collecting point or something. The division went off somewhere. Evidently they went off to France, and we were left for a few weeks behind. We didn't know what was happening to us.
Did you do any divisional exercises before they'd gone to France?
We never had any exercise with them. We just evidently posted to them, ready to go off to France, as it turned out to be. And we followed them on a week or two later.
So you went to France, according to the notes, in March 1917?
It'd be in March 1917, yes.
And... How did you feel about going to France? Had you heard about the Western Front and what it was like?
Well, of course, everybody knew about the Western Front, and we took it in our stride. We knew we were in the army, and I'd stayed with the battalion after the withdrawal from a week or two after I left. I should have gone on to Palestine, and where they went after Gallipoli. And then later on they were transferred to France, and they were wandering about France as the 42nd Division while I was with the machine gun corps. I think I mentioned, we were moving once, the 42nd Division were moving north. We were north and we crossed. We were going down to Passchendaele, and the 42nd were taking our places on the northern front of the line. So that's the sort of thing. It was your job there. You were... Had to go where you were sent.
What do you remember about the crossing?
We crossed from Southampton again there, and we went to Le Havre on this occasion, which is rather a longer crossing. It was uneventful. It wasn't. I don't remember any rough weather or anything else. Sort of thing. We just disembarked at Le Havre, and then after we disembarked there, we went into the old cattle truck sort of thing, there. No, we went by rail, but there weren't compartments, and there were these cattle rooms where there, 40 oms and 8 or 10 or 12 chevaux or something, 40 men and 8 horses, or 8 horses. We were just in these cattle trucks and wandered across France to...
What happened to your transport, to your limbers, your machine gun limbers?
Well, they evidently they were all loaded onto... onto the train, and they all went off there.
That'd be the transport officer's job.
Well, the transport officer's job to look after there, because as I say, there were quite a lot of. We had a lot of stores, you know.
How would you sort things as company quartermaster sergeant? How would you secure the stores you needed on a journey like this? Would it be to the nearest depot, or how would you know on a rail journey and such? How would you make? Where would you get the rations from the men?
Well, there was an organisation, no matter wherever you went. If you went to Boulogne, there was a depot that you had to report to there, and you'd probably get your ration from wherever you had to report. That's what.
So you just indented to the nearest major depot.
Well, you reported if you'd been on leave, for instance, and came back again, or you were first going to France, you went there, you got your orders to report at the depot where there was a disembarkation officer there. You had to report to them, and he'd get your papers and send you wherever.
You were with a whole company, but it would be the same principle, would it?
Well, when we went out as a company, and presumably there were other machine gun companies going out, I don't know. We just went on our own, and we went on the ship there. And when we got there, there was the organisation there. We went onto these cattle trucks, whatever you like to call them, the railways. And they always had fatigue parties. The men had to help in getting these things onto the trains and so forth. It was just part of the organisation.
And where did you go on?
Well, we were just going west somewhere. We went on. We're on the train probably for, I think it was about 30 hours. We went started one afternoon, midday, and we didn't get there till the following night. And we arrived at a little village, behind the lines at. On the Labassie front, actually.
Do you remember the village's name?
Little, yes, Aniquin.
Aniquin?
Aniquin, yes. We were there, and it was in the dark. It was raining very, very hard. It was quite a business there, because we were taking over from another machine gun company who were evidently moving to another part of the line. And we were sort of taking over in the darkness there.
How was a machine gun company distributed when it went into the line? Because it isn't like an infantry battalion. Where would the actual gun sections be, and where would the command structure be? How was it organised when you went into the line?
Well, when if you were attached to a brigade, there was four battalions. The 5th, 6th, 7th and 8th instant of the Manchurian, that was a brigade. A machine gun company had 16 machine guns. So if you were taking all the machine guns into action, that would be, you would take on a front of four battalions and have posts all strung along the line. Or perhaps three per battalion, two per battalion, or even four per battalion. According to the circumstances.
Would the battalions have their own machine guns as well?
Oh, no. After the reorganisation, it came under the new authority.
They'd just have Lewis guns then, would they?
They may have had their Lewis guns, but we weren't concerned. We were just concerned with the machine gun posts and so forth. So you would be attached to a brigade or a division. So you'd be attached. So you'd be in touch with the brigade, and not necessarily the battalions. You see, so you were taking over a brigade front, and you were taking over whatever machine gun posts there were.
And how did the command structure work? Who told the machine gun posts what to do? That would be the major, would it?
Well, the major, yes, he was in touch with the brigade. He got there was an officer to each machine gun there, so he passed on the orders from them, from the brigade division to brigade, brigade to the company, and then to company to the. That was the organisation.
What would there be there would be battalion officers from each of the battalions in there. Could they? Would they? They'd liaise together, I presume.
Well, there had to be some sort of liaison there, but normally machine gun posts were out. Normally we'd be just behind the line, the machine gun posts behind the line. It all varied according to all the circumstances.
But they'd be in the second lines then, you mean?
Pardon?
You mean they'd be in the second line, or...?
Well, about not necessarily a line at all. There might be just machine gun posts here and there. Well, behind the line, just behind the first line. It all depended on the circumstances.
You'd be responsible for getting the rations to those posts, would you?
I was responsible for getting the ration to the post and getting ammunition up to there and that sort of thing, and seeing the usual thing. So after we had arrived at this village there, and then the next day, that was the day that we had to take over the machine gun post. They had to be escorted by the people we were to the post, therefore. And then afterwards, it was left to us. They went off to wherever they were going. And then the organisation of feeding the post and so forth and equipping the post was left to us. My job was to see that they got the rations each day, they got the ammunition, and they got anything else. If there was a rum ration, it was sent up. That would be sent up from there. And we used to send it up from that particular place anyway. We used to send the limber. We used to send a limber up there with the rations and stores and so forth. And they went around as near as they could get to each post. And then they were dropped off there, and these rations went off. We used to put the things in sandbags, you know. And I had to know exactly how many there were on each post, you know. So, I mean, we used to pick us up the rations according to 6 men to this post, 5 men to another, or 6 men so forth. And they were all sorted out. And then they were sent out. And then the transport sergeant was responsible for seeing that these went off to the respective posts.
What kind of rations were you issuing there? Was it the same as in Gallipoli?
Well, yes, to some extent, although there was better rations in France than ever we got in Gallipoli. And all.
In what way? What was better?
Well, there was meat and so forth, and there was more vegetables and so forth. You've got potatoes and so forth, and you sometimes got fruit, and I remember having oranges and so on. And I remember meat there. I remember even we had rabbits on occasion there, and the rabbits were sent up to the post, and they had to deal with them up there.
You wouldn't do any of, you wouldn't organise any of the cooking, would you? Or would you?
No, I didn't organise. When our people were out of the line, you got your battalion cooks.
And company cooks.
Company cooks, rather. You had the company cooks. And they could have a really cooked meal on a company basis. Then they'd be issued out through the normal channels, you know, to each of the sections.
But in the line, what was it?
In the line, it was like it was far away we were concerned. It was like out in Gallipoli, they had to deal with their own rations.
So if they got sent up meat, it would be raw, they'd cook it when they got it.
They'd have to cook it when they got it. If they couldn't cook it, well, that was it. But some of these posts, this Hannibal front, the Albasi front, was fairly static front from there when we were there. And the posts never seemed to vary very much, so they made the facilities for that sort of a bit of cooking and so forth and so on. But when it came to a sort of not static warfare, that was a different kettle of fish altogether.
If you knew there was when it was static, you'd be when they had some sort of cooking facilities, you'd probably know. If they hadn't, would you not send up things that needed cooking? Would you send up more bully? More, or what?
Oh, yes, you were in touch with them, you know, but generally speaking, whilst we were on that front, the men managed there, and the food that we sent up, raw food, they dealt with it, and they managed to cook it.
What was the quality of the food, the raw food that you were sending up?
Was it good? It was quite good, yes. Yes, quite good. It was more, I say, much more elaborate than much different, more better variety altogether than ever we had out in Gallipoli anyway.
Was it fresh?
Fresh, yes. There's a lot of it. Well, whether you could call rabbits fresh or not, they must have been fresh enough to be sent up to the line. they're in cases and whatnot. We had to break open and they're there with it, send them. I thought it was rather strange when the first consignment of rabbits came there for the line. Normally, if they hadn't been in line, they'd have been cooked in the cookhouse, you know, for the...
Were they prepared, the rabbits, or were they just...
No, they had to be skinned. Whether that was something exceptional or not, but I remember it quite well.
What was this? So did you get up into the round the post? Would you go round the post?
Well, there's no need to go except just on an occasional when things are quiet.
So where was your...
Was at the back, you know, to...
Where was the equivalent of the orderly office? I mean, it wouldn't be an office.
Well, that was in the village that I'm talking about. That was a mile or so behind the...